Good afternoon, or still morning, actually. Let's call this meeting to order. City Council Work Session Tuesday, July 30th, 2013. Present, City Manager Matthew Brower, City Councilman Jay Musley, City Councilwoman Suzie Heimbuckle, myself, John McLeod, City Councilman Daniel Owen, and Clerk Angel Jacobs. Mr. Brower, turn it over to you.
Thank you, Council President. This morning, this afternoon, we have with us Nick Guerriello, who is FMPA's CEO. Nick today is going to talk about FMPA, talk a little bit about the All Requirements Project. We'll also broach upon a number of critical initiatives or issues that FMPA is working on right now. Discussion will take about an hour. Nick's asked that it kind of be a question and answer type format, so if you have a question or a comment, to go ahead and provide that as you see fit. Otherwise, Nick, I'm going to turn it over to you for the presentation.
Thanks, Matt. Can you put this on? Matt reminded me to press the button. We have similar mics at our office. We always have to remind people to press the button, shut the button, press the button, shut it off, etc. So, but please, like Matt said, I have a probably could talk for about an hour on the topics Matt asked me to talk about. Please interrupt me at any time with questions. I feel more comfortable at the end, but I'd like to get questions during the presentation. I'll try to answer them all. Next one. What I'd like to talk about today is I was up for about 3 years ago, and I did what we call AR 101, which is sort of a meeting to discuss All Requirements Project, which is our main project that Ocala is a founding member of. And I had a chance to have a big audience, which was very much appreciated, to explain what All Requirements Project is. This time, Matt asked me to come up and maybe talk more about what's going on today, the FMPA's competitive outlook, and electric industry in the country and in Florida, what that outlook looks like, pump strategic initiatives, and some current key issues. But first, since it's been a while since I've been here, I'd like to spend a little time telling you a little about FMPA, who we are, what we do, and how Ocala is involved in that. Next, yes. FMPA is a wholesale power supplier. We supply power to all the requirements of 14 members in our All Requirements Project, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. And then we have 17 other members. Some are in specific projects like St. Lucie nuclear unit that we got into in 1983. Some are in the Stanton coal units, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And others are members and take part in what we have called member services. And member services like lineman training, meter reading type of services. So we have those for some of the larger cities that participate. Most of our cities out of the 31, almost all of them participate in some member services. And Matt's very familiar with that, and your staff's very familiar with service providing. And Ocala participates in some. So the latest city to join, which I thought is interesting, we've had 30 members almost since inception. Back in 1978, I think we only had 27 and went up to 30 in the early 80s. We just added, last year, Winter Park. You might be familiar with Winter Park. Formed a municipal utility in 2002. They bought all that power from Progress Energy at Duke Power back then. They formed in 2002, first municipal form of the state in a long, long time. Mainly because they wanted to put their lines underground in Winter Park, you know, down Park Avenue, et cetera. And that's what they've been doing. And they buy power mostly from Progress Energy, Duke now, and Seminole. So I thought that was interesting, and that's our 31 members. The only three electric utilities in the state of Florida that are not members are Jackson Electric, the largest municipal in the state, Reedy Creek Improvement District, which serves Disney, and Tallahassee. Next. One of our mantras is that we look at FMPA as a combination of what we call community power and statewide strength. Joining together with the other 30 cities, you have a chance to talk as a group. Working with FMEA, Florida Municipal Electric Association, we attend legislative rallies in Washington. We usually do that in March. Go talk with the cities, You always have representatives up there from Ocala and from the other cities, meet with the legislature, the congressmen and senators. We have our legislative in our Orlando area that we meet with too, but we go with you and meet with them and put forth some of the causes that the municipal electric utilities are interested in. Like right now, just to say, you know, one of the big things out there right now is keeping tax-exempt financing for municipal and governmental entities. There is a movement in Congress to, you know, balance the budget, look at everything that gives breaks on taxes. I just sent a letter last Thursday to Senator Nelson and Senator Rubio and to our congressmen to support keeping municipal tax-exempt status. I mean, not only affects electric utilities, water, wastewater, general government, and it affects individuals that use those for investments. So that's a big item out there, just to mention that. And then we also have a rally in usually in February in Tallahassee with our state legislature. So that's where we could bring forth, and usually most of the cities attend, we could bring forth that community power and statewide strength. And then as a wholesale power supplier, we do a lot of what your staff had to do way back, and in those, when I say way back in the 70s probably, all requirements formed in 86, in supplying your power. We do the planning, we build power plants, we own power plants, we purchase power. Our staff does that. We have a staff of 75 in Orlando. Well, actually, there's 70 in Orlando and 5 in Tallahassee. That's where our legal staff is. And that's Leon County is our official office. So we do that, and then we deliver to what we call the village gate for you as an all requirements member for Ocala, which is where you tie into the transmission system. Then you take it from there and deliver it over to the distribution system to your customers. You take care of customer service, billing, et cetera. So that's how we tie the two together. Next. No, okay. You're ahead of me. No, it's okay.
Anticipating.
You are, thank you. Thanks. How is FMPA governed? As I mentioned, we have 31 members. We have a board of directors that each of the cities has a member on the board of directors. And on the board, we have a weighted voting. It's weighted based on the projects you're in. If you're in the oil requirements project, and I think you know what the oil requirements is in general, but I'll explain it more in a minute. But if you're in the oil requirements project, like Ocala is, you get 2 votes. If you're in one of our other projects, you get 1.5 vote. And if you're not in a project like Land Utilities Commission, you get 1 vote. And with Winter Park now, that adds up to 48.5. So that's how we changed governance in 2007. We used to only have a board of directors, 1 person, 1 vote, but we decided the members decided that the oil requirements project was the biggest project, most of the work is done on the oil requirements project. They should have a little bit of a weighted vote. We then formed a new thing called the executive committee. We had something like the executive committee back when, but it wasn't a voting body. It just gave recommendations to the board. This executive committee is called the All Requirements Executive Committee. It has 14 members. Cal again is one of them, and they each have 1 person, 1 vote on the executive committee. We also, when the governance changed, this is a key thing because it's come into play a couple times now. They changed the governance because they're all different size cities, different needs, different, well, maybe not different needs, but different opinions, to if there's something to do with 3 items. If we're going to issue long-term debt, we have contracts more than 7 years, we're going to change the rate schedules, it takes a supermajority vote. And that starts by any 2 members of the 14, say you approve a bond issue. Say the 14 members approve and it passes 8-7, 9-6, whatever. Okay, any 2 members, one member could raise his hand and said, this is a bond issue, I want a supermajority vote. Somebody else says, I agree, just 2 have to say that, and we go to a supermajority vote, which could override the majority vote. And that has a 75%, so 4 were to vote against it, it would fail. Any questions while anyone wants to jump in? So that's how we're governed. Every once in a while, I think in the near future, we're probably going to reconvene the governance committee. There's some things that have come up that the members might want them to look at. And then underneath that, you see the board of directors has control or approval rights over the four projects, not all requirements, over Stanton Project, Tri-City Project, Stanton 2 Project, and St. Lucie Project. And I'll mention them real briefly now. Those are projects, like Stanton has six members joined in. Now, Ocala's not in any of these projects, because except for St. Lucie, when the Stanton projects came up, Ocala was already a member of the requirements. We supply everything for them. And our requirements got into the Stanton projects for all 14, okay? St. Lucie was in 1983, and whatever reason, Ocala wasn't in that project. There were 15 members in that project back in 1983. So those are governed by the board, because they are, anybody could be in them, and it's like, St. Lucie has 15 members, including some of the bigger ones. The executive committee oversees Conservation Renewable Advisory Committee and oversees the Ore Requirements Project. That's why it's called the Ore Requirements Executive Committee. Next. Another committee that we're very proud of, and you should be too, is the Policymakers Liaison Committee. And this was formed about 4 years ago. It was the brainchild of Nancy Gemsky, a KUA board member. And she said, you know, they have an authority, and their manager would come to them with a FMPA man. And I'm old school, I'm way back. I was involved in the first board meeting of FMPA in 1978. I just had a grammar school, but I was involved in the first board meeting February 24th, 1978. And I remember that you tried to get people to the meetings. You know, you wanted to get people to the meetings. And it was,
we didn't call that grammar school in 78. It was we didn't call it grammar school in 78.
Help me out.
We'd already elementary. Moved to elementary.
Oh, I gotta really go back far. Well, wait a minute. I'm from Brooklyn, so I might, you know, we don't change things that quickly. If I could give a side note, the funniest thing that happened to me when I
Primary school.
I went to a
grammar school.
I went to a Catholic grammar school. I swear that's what it was.
Wow. Don't worry about it. You're from Brooklyn. She's from Kentucky. So y'all just.
I'm sure that wasn't the kind of question.
Are both of those in the USA?
Just barely.
Now, I have to tell my little quick story. When I first came down here in 77, my boss was from Nebraska. And we're on a plane, and something came up, and I said, gee, yeah, my mother used to make great macaroni with gravy. And he looked at me and said, you put brown gravy on your macaroni? There's no red gravy. In Brooklyn, was gravy. It wasn't sauce, but anyway. Where was I?
You're in grammar school. Oh,
Policymakers Liaison Committee. Nancy Gempsey came up with the thought that when city managers or utility directors would come back to the councils and had to look for you to prove something that FMPA was involved in, you weren't as educated, maybe. Your city manager kept you trying to keep you abreast. But she thought it would be good to have policy liaison on one group and meet four times a year. Daniel is your policy liaison committee member. And they meet four times a year. They just met in July. And we talk about legislative matters at the state, federal level. I give my GM comments and bring them up to speed on what's going on at FMPA. And anything might be coming up for a vote. So that one, and it could be more than one, but mostly most of the 14 cities have just one. Fort Pierce actually has somebody from the authority and the city on it. But most have just one. And that person could then be up to speed more on a matter that might come before the council and could, you know, talk about it and discuss it at an open meeting about which he or she might have heard from those meetings. So that's what the Policy Liaison Committee does. And we have a member from every city, except for one, of the 14 Ore requirements. And we've been having some non-Ore requirements on it. Let's see, I think, next. Okay. I talked about these projects, so I won't spend too much time on it. It's just showing you that these are the projects we have on the FMPA. And the key for Ocala is the Ore requirements project. Like I said, you're not in any of the other projects, but you are through the Ore requirements. Next. One of the driving forces for forming FMPA back in 1977, 1978, basically was two. The biggest one was economies of scale. As a small city, Even this, well, even Ocala probably back then was maybe in 100 meg or 150 megawatts, some that size back in the late 70s. You can fund an 800 megawatt nuclear unit or even a 300 megawatt combined cycle unit. Most of the cities that had generation, Ocala did not back then, but most of the cities that had generation had very small units, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 megawatt units. So, and what was starting was the investor-owned utilities were building the large nuclear, the large coal units, and getting the benefits of economies of scale. Bigger the unit, the price went down. That's not so true anymore, but the price went down. So there was a push to form the Florida Missile Power Agency. And the other thing that happened back then in 1976, it was Florida Power Corporation, now Duke, came to the cities and the co-op and said, we're going to build a Crystal River nuclear unit. We can't do it alone. Even they couldn't do it alone back then in 1976. It was 800 megawatt unit. Would any of you like a piece of the Crystal River nuclear unit? And I'd like, we really want you in this unit. Nine cities plus Seminole Electric Co-op stepped up and said, you will take a piece. But there was no FMPA. So each one of those nine cities had to hire their own bond counsel, banking team, consulting engineers, and then finance individually through their own bonds. So that ability to compete within large units and the ability to compete in a bigger group, bigger load, is why FMPA, one of the main reasons FMPA was formed. And again, the first meeting was February 24th, 1978.
And Nick, we bought, the city of Ocala bought, was it 1.5% of Crystal River 3?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, 1.333%.
Yeah. Oh, 1.3.
Yeah, 1.3333, right. That's yeah. right. And you did that on your own. You had your own bond counsel, did your financing in 76. I'm not sure if those bonds are still outstanding.
I don't think so.
Yeah, too. They should be. But they should have been paid off. They were 30-year bonds. So at this point, I'll talk about Crystal River in a little while. I mean, it was a good deal after time. I mean, when you first built it, that was an expensive, what we call capacity. The energy was really low, energy being the fuel you burn. Like today, nuclear fuel, when you burn it in, say, St. Lucie, the energy cost might be $10 a megawatt hour. A combined cycle unit, even with the low gas prices now, is somewhere from $30 to $35. A coal unit was a couple months ago in the 40s. It's down back in the 30s right now. Coal prices come down a little bit. So it was very cheap energy, and it ran all the time it was available. And that's why you want the cheap energy goes on the bottom to serve your load. But it was very expensive. I don't remember Crystal River, but St. Lucie, which was built in, came online in 1983, was $402 a kilowatt. $402 a kilowatt. When we were working with Progress on behalf of the oil requirements, you and others, talking about Levy County nuclear, back now it's been about a year and a half, it was $7,500 a kilowatt. And right now, they're talking about Levy County still being built, maybe in 2022, 2023, possibly over $10,000 a kilowatt. Okay? So the price, it's very expensive capacity, but now you've paid off the bonds. If it was still operating, it'd be a good deal right now. It was a good deal years ago, because I'm sure the bonds must have been paid off by probably 2006.
Yeah.
So it was a good deal. It was really, there was O&M and things like that, but and capital improvements, but there was no fixed debt. So I got a little off.
Nick, when it was built, what was the life expectancy of it?
They got a 40-year license. Sorry. They got a 40-year license, so 76 to 2016, the end of 2016. And the NRC later came out and said, well, we consider life extension of 20 years. So right now, any nuclear unit that was built is 40 years. Crystal River could have been retired January 1st, 2017. They were in the process of filing for a life extension. I don't remember the exact number, but 30 or 40 nuclear plants have already got life extensions, so they could go 60 years. And who knows, 10 years from now, 5 years from now, NRC might come out and say, well, we'll consider another life extension. Now, those things are pretty well built. They have to be to contain the radioactive material and all that. But that 60 years would be the max right now.
Okay.
And actually, when they built them back then, I'll digress a minute, you had to get a construction permit first. And you took the risk, after you constructed the thing, you had to then go back for an operating license. And over that 9 years of building it, 8-9 years to build a nuclear unit back then, who knows what would change, and the NRC decides after 9 years, okay, you did it, but we got all these other safety requirements you got to do first. before we give you a license. They changed that to try to encourage nuclear, probably several years ago, to get what they call a COLA. It's a combination construction operating license, COLA, agreement. And you get your approval to build it and to operate it up front. Okay? So that's new, and that is why there, you see there's a, I don't want to say a lot, a few utilities out there now have, actually, MEAG and Southern Power Company got their COLA back in November, and they're building Vogtle 3 and 4, two 1,100 megawatt units up in Georgia. And Sandy Cooper got their COLA with Scana to build two units, Sumner 3 and 4, up in North, in the Carolinas. Those are the only two that I know have gotten up, the brand first to get construction operating license for nuclear. And actually, MEAG, we had a report from the fellow MEAG the other day. It's looking like it could come online by the fall of 2017 and the second unit in 2018. No guarantees yet, but that'll be first nuclear unit in 20-something years coming online. Spent a lot of time on that. Okay. So again, what we see as joint actions for FMTA produces three primary benefits: economies of scale, access to resources, technical, financial, and others to FMPA staff and members. FMPA, with your approval, has a group of bankers on board that we work with, I think it's seven or eight. It changes and it grows. You know, we used to have Lehman on it until it went bankrupt. It changes. They help us. We have a staff of 75 on the technical, financial, human resource side, helping member services. We have a member services group that works with each of the cities in providing services, and the strength in numbers. Next. Maybe a little repetitive here, but all requirements was created to control their destiny. We wanted to work together. We have on the next slide, I'll jump a little bit here quicker. Again, like I said, what do? We FMPA, we do the joint planning. We develop new power supply resources. All requirements was formed in May 1st, 1986. You went into business. It had five cities as the members back then, and I'll talk about that in a minute, who. And you've been in business now, what, 35 years. We just celebrated last year, 35 years for the old requirements. And you started with five members. And you brought on a staff. The first staff was a general manager and a secretary. And we've grown, like I said, to 75 right now. We've been about that size for years now. We used to only purchase power. We purchased from FPNL, from Duke, from Seminole, from TECO, until I guess the first units you built were down in Key West. Actually, you bought some used gas turbines and put them in Key West. Okay. Since then, you've gotten into the generation business, the requirements.
What was the thought process, or what happened to make us go from buying power, which is what we were formed with, that we could all, you know, together buy it less expensively together than we could by ourselves, to getting into the generation business? And that was a big decision for us to get into the generation business from where we were.
Yeah, aside, we're gonna have a strategic planning session starting in September. I think one of the topics is gonna be, should we keep building power plants or should we go back to purchasing? And my recollection, because I was around in that time period, same type of discussion was had in the late 90s when the generating cities started joining all requirements. They operated generation, they knew how to operate generation, so why isn't FMPA doing that?
Right.
That was the main reason. In addition, the investor-owned utilities you were buying power from, back then were going rate increase after rate increase after rate increase.
Right.
You put in your own unit, like we talked about Crystal River.
Right.
A little more expensive capacity in the beginning, but in time, as you pay off your debt service, the cost stabilize, it becomes real competitive. Okay. And anything we added, like we added the two units at Key West, where actually we had to have them down there, there at the end of a long line, and the York Crimes Project has committed to keep 60% on island generation. So we put some gas turbines down there, and we still own those down there. We went with a 300 megawatt combined cycle unit in Treasure Coast. Fort Pierce retired their old generation, which was about 100 megawatts, and it was getting expensive, so it was good for FMPA, for them to retire their generation, and we put a 300-megawatt combined cycle natural gas unit there. Gas prices were really good back then, they're back now, but they were really good, and it was an economical decision.
Right.
So it was a decision, Generating City said, we could do this. Fort Pierce operates units for us. They kept staff on, they operate. We did the same thing with Kissimmee at Kane Island.
Right.
We got four units there. We own two of them, too. We split 50-50 with them. Actually, we have virtual ownership now.
So it was just a matter of economics that we just felt that we could do better.
Economics and new members coming in saying, hey, we know how to do this. Why are we relying on the investor owned utilities to build it?
Sure.
The co-ops had done that years before, that Seminole Electric Co-op.
True.
Seminole Electric Co-op is co-op FMPA.
Right.
It does the same thing. It has 10 members.
Yeah.
10 of the co-op, 10 of the 11 co-ops in the state.
Clay Electric, I think, is in our area here.
They build one block.
Yeah.
They build two 600-megawatt. They have coal units. They don't need further than we did. They have some bigger members. Lee County's 1,000 megawatts. They got some big members, and they're all. The only one that's not is Keys Co-op. It's not a member of Seminole. That answer you?
Yeah, that answers the question.
Nick, maybe just as a follow-up, when we were considering the Levy Nuclear Project, you know, we also had the discussion with some of the IOUs whether we could do a power purchase agreement. And at that time, it was a capacity issue. They didn't have enough capacity to sell anyone because of their own growth. This, of course, is before the recession. Was that also a play in that aspect?
On the Levy County?
Yeah.
On
just generally speaking, in the 2000s, the IOUs didn't have capacity to sell as a power purchase agreement.
I'm trying to remember going back, because we did Treasure Coast in about 2000. Yeah. What happened before the economy went down? Everybody was looking and had to add generation, and they didn't have anything to sell. You're right, because that changed quite a bit. We made our decision on Treasure Coast and Kent Island before the economy changed. So that's a play, too. We probably could have bought it. Would have been at a higher price, and they would have had to build it. But that's probably another piece of it.
Okay.
Next one. I mentioned this before. This is Ocala's role and the other cities' roles. You distribute the power to local customers, you set rates and billing, and it's community-owned, locally governed. And that's a key of how we split. We're, like I said, at the village gate.
Hello?
Yes?
Oh.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. That back up to that last previous slide. Yes, I mean, that's the argument that, you know, we hear and Barry, you know, talks about with, you know, some of the folks in Tallahassee, where they're talking about, you know, well, they use the term taxation without representation, that we're, you know, selling electricity to people that don't live outside the city and don't have a vote, you know. But with what, you know, you've got there with, you know, distributing power local customers, we set the rates, do the billing, and community owned, locally governed. I mean, There's no better example of community-owned, locally governed. When you came to town, you sat over there at the community room with the police department, and they probably had five nooses for us hanging, you know, on the city square. I mean, that was, you know, the voice of the people being heard then.
Absolutely.
And there's no way you would get that with Public Service Commission, you know, overseeing.
Absolutely.
That's one of the things Barry has in our presentations. I have in mind is, you're here.
Yeah.
Anybody can walk in that door and come here and talk to you.
Sure. Yeah. The grocery store, call me at my house, get them off. Yeah. Yeah. Anywhere.
Yeah, in fact, I'd been in town less than 48 hours. That was my first council meeting that night.
Good point, Ken. Next. Okay, I want to spend a little time. You're the owners of the Oregon Requirements Project. The Oregon Requirements Executive Committee makes the decisions. Staff makes recommendations, use all technical capabilities, financial capabilities to bring you what we think is the right approach. We have a policy that if it's anything important, we bring it first as an info item to the Executive Committee 1 month, and we bring it back as an action item. So we have a good process to get the your member of our Executive Board involved. A little Oregon Requirements history. I like talking about this because, like I said, it started in 1986, May 1st, but it took some time to get cities to say, let's join together as Oregon Requirements. You had to form FUMPA, but it was still somewhat independent, still making all those decisions. Let's form Oregon Requirements and let staff take care of that. And I used to be with Audubon Beck, a consulting engineering firm. I did the original feasibility study for the Ori Quines Pack project back in 84, 85. And we finally got off the ground is the generating cities that own generation, they were a little cautious, you know, what do they do with that generation? Do they sell it to FUMPA? Do they turn over to FUMPA? So we mainly work with the non-generating cities. And there were 11 of them on the west side, the Progress Power Corp, Progress Energy Duke side, and only three or five on the Power and Light side. We work with all those non-generating cities, and one of the mantras back there was all for one, one for all. Let's get together, let's work together in all these areas. And I have in what I usually present, the founding members of Ori Quines was Ocala, Leesburg, and Bushnell on the west side, and Jacksonville Beach and Green Coast Springs on the east side. And Bushnell was the smallest city. They're about 6 megawatts. You're 200 something megawatts. They signed up first. But one of the quotes we like to use is from Gerald Ergel, who was an Ocala City Council member. So you remember that name from back when. And his quote that we used, we knew the savings estimate. I got a comment on that. Because I did the report, and we were only showing 4 to 5% savings. But he said, we knew the savings estimates were conservative, they were. And we factored that into our decision. But more than savings or anything else, we are frustrated by the lack of control over a major part of our destiny, and frustrated by Florida Power Corporations, now known as Progress Energy Florida, emphasis on short-term results at the expense of our long-term mutual prosperity. We knew that with FUMPA, we have control, and the agency would have our interest at heart. And that's one of the quotes I like to use at any of these meetings, any of the city. Turned out that in the first 9 months, you saved 19%. In the first 10 years, the Ori Quines project saved $123.7 million.
Wow.
And at the last minute, at your council meeting here in Ocala, when we were going around, and we had did a road show, dog and pony show, and I had these charts back then, no computer. We had these big charts with all the present worth savings and all that. Progress Energy showed up outside. So we want to say something. We want to talk about Progress. Well, Florida Power Corp was your supplier, total supplier back then. You allowed, of course, let them speak. And they said, listen, don't join FMPA. We'll guarantee you for the next 10 years, if you don't join FMPA, we'll bill you every month a lower rate of our rate or FUMPA's rate. They were bragging that they were going to be lower than FUMPA for the whole next 10 years. Don't worry about it. FUMPA's not going to be competitive. You said no. Leesburg said no. Bushnell said no. Interesting enough, Power and Light did not do the same thing on the other side. But Progress did that. And there was 11 Ori Quines Progress customers back then. Three of them joined Ori Quines. The other 8 stayed with Progress. And you guys saved in that 10-year period $123 million because we were one of the lowest in the states every month almost. Those other 8, which were small, very small, they saved $34 million. Got checks from Progress for $34 million. Progress never extended that after the first 10 years. It's just an interesting stat. It's bragging. I'll tell you the other side. We were low for quite a while. You know we've gone through some higher rates in the last several years. We're getting back down there again. But things flip.
Sure.
But I'm proud of being part of that for those 10 years we had that. Next. Okay, this question comes up, and I'm almost finished with the, I got to keep an eye on time. I got to get to some of the other stuff. You have a 30-year contract. That comes up a lot. Why do we have to have a 30-year contract? It's a rolling 30-year contract. It's part of what's going on in Vero Beach, which I'll talk about at the end. They're in the 30-year contract. They gave their notice with certain requirements to protect all the members. And this, we felt, was very important to protect the members. Who wants to be the last one shutting the lights off? Protect the members and protect the bondholders. So that's why we have a long, most of our debt was 30 years. You needed to make the bondholders and the trustee and all feel comfortable about issuing that debt that you're going to pay it off. Not saying you can't get out. There are ways to get out. There are notices. As long as you keep everybody whole that's left, you know, just like if you want to walk away from a mortgage, or if you're a rent, if you've got a mortgage to 4 other people for a big house, this is an example I use, you can't just one day get up in the morning and say, I'm moving, I'm leaving. You guys keep the mortgage, you pay it. They committed to pay a fifth of that for a period of time. So, next.
Nick, I wish you could explain that to some of our borrowers, because they've forgotten that concept.
Well, we spent a lot of time explaining it to the Vero Beach Council and to some of their customers. You know, maybe I'll talk real quickly about Vero Beach here. I had at the end, but I know you're interested. You know, Vero Beach made a decision a year or more ago that they decided they wanted to sell their electric system to Florida Power and Light. And they talked to Power and Light, and it was mutual. And they got together and talked about it. I think, Kent, you mentioned something. The biggest driving force, I believe 55% of their customers outside the city limits.
Right.
Government without, you know, taxation without representation type of thing is the argument. They have a council that at least three, most of the stuff going on is 3-2 vote on doing this, that wanted to move ahead with it. And again, we believe it was a mutual thing between FPNL. They approached them and said, hey, would you be interested? They're in the FPNL service area. And they worked to come up with an agreement to sell the system, the whole system, okay? And there's a lot of, it's public pretty much. Power and Light's gonna pay, I think, $115 million and gonna take over some pension liabilities, and they're gonna compensate OUC for, because OUC was selling them power, not us. They used to be part of all requirements. Vero Beach, they gave notice in 2005 and left the requirements in 2010. So they had a long-term contract with OUC, they had penalties in it. So they had to work a lot of stuff out, all publicly. So they worked it out. What they did that is causing them a little bit of a problem now, they worked it all out with Power and Light and OUC first, knowing they had to come to FMPA, because they're in our Stanton, Stanton 2, and St. Lucie projects. And they made commitments in those projects, the long-term mortgage type thing. They made commitments, and they're in, even though they had given notice, they were still no requirements member. They haven't given notice, they didn't give notice to get out of our requirements. This gets notice not to binding from us anymore after 5 years. So they had obligations. But they worked all this out over here, and then they came to us and said, here's what we're gonna do. What do you think, let us out, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the agreement is that what Power and Light's gonna do, they're gonna pay OUC, they're gonna pay OUC, no, I'm sorry, OUC is gonna take our Vero Beach, Stanton, Stanton 2, and St. Lucie entitlements, power entitlements. FMPA issued the debt for those three projects. St. Lucie has 15 members, okay? Vero's one of them. Vero wants to leave, wanna give up their entitlement, they wanna give it to OUC. Okay, the documents say you could do that, it has to be a tax-exempt entity. And I'm gonna go into a little more detail here, because you might get a visit from Vero Beach City Council. I don't know if you've been reading that, but they've been saying they might wanna come to each of the O requirements members to convince you to do certain things to make it easier for them. They signed up, you know, for that project as one of the 15. They made commitments to pay the debt, et cetera. They can, under the agreement, give it to a tax-exempt entity, no problem. Oh, you see, good tax-exempt entity, has a better rating than Vero Beach. Yeah, sounds okay. But part of the deal is, way we understand it, is that capacity from the coal units, OUC doesn't need it. They're overbuilt right now. They don't need it. St. Lucie, the nuclear is good. They've got low energy costs, but they don't need these things. They would sell it back to FPNL for 3 years to a taxable entity. Okay, and I'm not the expert, but under the IRS rules and all that, there is some ways of doing that. There's a three-year exemption, there's the de minimis exemption, but it's, you know, not perfectly clear. So our attorneys have said, and our bond counsel said, okay, you want to do that, we're probably going to get comfortable with OUC, good bond rating, but we need an IRS ruling. Because if it doesn't happen, and you do that, we lose our tax-exempt status on all our debt, okay? And that's millions and millions of dollars of extra interest we're going to pay over the life of the bonds. So we need an IRS ruling. Worked on that for quite a while. First they said, no, you don't. Our attorneys will give you their opinions. We stuck to our guns and said, we need an IRS ruling. These are on the three projects, Stanton 2 and St. Lucie, not on all requirements. That's separate. And we need you to, the agreement says, if you want to do this, you got to go stay on the hook until the life of the bonds are paid off, in case OUC defaults. Not likely. Okay, so we're going to work with them and try to make this work. But we need to make sure there is a fallback. Okay? And we did this with Homestead and Lake Worth back in the 90s when the hurricane came through Homestead. they transferred some of their capacity to KUA. They're still on the, you know, still on the hook there if anything happens to KUA. They're going to be selling their electric utility system. How do they do that? But without getting into a lot of negotiation details, they have come up with some potential solutions, and we're looking at that. We just got it last week, right before we went to the annual conference. They've come up with some ways of backing it up, so we're willing to look at it. We'll definitely consider it. Our attorneys insisted we got to get an IRS ruling. Their plan A, the way they're going to sell it, they finally figured out it's not going to work. So they went to plan B. They got a new plan that we're going to discuss with them in a couple of weeks, see if that can make sense, but we still feel we need an IRS ruling. So on the projects, we're moving ahead. We're not in a position to try to stop them, hold them up. If they want to do that, it's up to them. Just live up to the promises you made in the contracts. So that's the main things there.
Nick, can you elaborate on if the Vero Beach City Council or their proxy shows up here at the mic, what might the request be? What could our city council expect that request to be?
Okay, for this one, that's the old requirements problem. They're not going to come here on the Stanton Tri-City. Not to your council, they'll come to the FMPA board, because the board oversees those projects. Okay? They'll come to the council on the old requirements contract. They're still a member of the old requirements. Now, I'm pretty sure, I got to talk to Fred, that on St. Louis Stanton, you're not in those. I don't know why they would come here for that. I guess they are making some noise now that they think the board or the executive committee can make those decisions. And we say no, it hasn't come back to the cities. But in all requirements, which you are a member, there are similar things in the requirements contract says, if you want to not get served any load anymore, give us certain notice, which they did. So we stopped serving load in January 1st, 2010. They had enough generation to serve their own load. So they took their load back, they took their generation back, and they take care of it with a contract with OUC and their own generation. But also says that until you give notice to get out, you're in the requirements project. They never gave notice back in 2005, 7, 8. Now that they're selling the system, they realized they had to give notice. And whoever, didn't have any responsibility to tell them or anything like that. They just didn't give notice. They finally gave notice. And you might have heard they gave notice last year. Notice had to be given by September 30th. Of a year, that's our fiscal year, and goes 3 years, you get out. Well, they gave notice, I think September 15th of 2012, but they didn't give it the right way. And our attorneys are, this is what had to be done. It wasn't done right. We told them about it. We went right away and told them about it. In October, they redid the notice, did it the right way, told them exactly what they had to do. That pushed it out to October 1, 2016.
Okay,
so it's a year later. They might come to you. One of the things they come to you is say, "Would you waive that extra year?" Okay, waive the extra year that we could get out October 1st, 2015. Originally, they would want you to waive it totally. They thought they could close the deal by January 2014. They want to close the deal with FPNL and OUC. That's not going to happen right now. There's too much going on. But they would come to waive that. They might come to waive, bring it back to October 1st because it was close enough. They might come back and say, waive it till January 1st, 2015. I don't know. That hasn't been clear yet. But they are talking about doing a dog and pony. Because we are telling them the contract on all requirements says, you want that, you want to get out early, you need to get each one, all 14 members, have to vote unanimously, let you out. One says no, it doesn't work. So they've talked several times about coming to each city. The other thing we told them is under the old requirements, we have similar language like the mortgage. You can't just walk away. If we make commitments, we made commitments for you back when, until you gave your notice, until you gave your notice, until you leave, you got to be on the hook for that. One of the things, the easiest thing, and I'm going to run out of time, I know, tailor swaps. You've heard the words tailor swaps. Without going into details, I got a couple of slides on that will give you a lot more detail. We did something. We have this tailor swaps out there. It's not costing anything right now. But by October 1st, 2050, we have to do something or terminate those swaps. Right now, those swaps, we want to turn on today, is about $60 million we'd have to pay. 2 years ago, we actually got rid of some of them at zero cost. So right now, there's a liability. And if interest rates don't go up, which is the main thing that could help us by 2015, or we find a different way to do something with them, just let's say it's $60 million. Well, I think Vero Beach is 8% of your client's project. 8% of 60 million. Okay, or there is an argument of that, you know, well, what did they buy in those last couple of years? How much was it, what did it crowd have been? A lot of things going on, but that's another thing they're gonna come to you, might come to you and say, hey, we really don't know anything on that. There is a potential of an environmental problem at that generation site. We own the oil on that site. It could come back to haunt the FMPA. You're gonna protect us against that.
So let me just clarify this point really, really closely for just a moment. And if I get this wrong, Nick, please correct me. One of the asks of the Vero Beach City Council will be for the city to assume what they call their contingent liability for the Tater swaps, meaning they walk away and we assume that liability. And that's a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. You said it was $60 million?
Right now, total.
$60 million. And it's, for the most part, it's been the executive committee's board's opinion that they simply can't walk away from $60 million of liability. They gotta own that, just as we have to own our proportionate share of that as well. And so I think that's a pretty
clarify
good point.
For me, with the notice that they gave, when would they be clear of those swap
October 1st, 2016.
Okay.
Right now, and that's why they're gonna ask you for a waiver to bring it back to 50 or maybe bring it back further.
But with them giving notice, they will be able to walk away from those liabilities on a certain date.
Well, we'll know by October 1st, 2015, one way or the other. They have that liability, and what they're supposed to do is they give you a check mm-hmm. for their share. And make it clear, there's some disagreement on what their share is of the $60 million, because they gave notice in CROD in 2005. That's got to be discussed. We're going to discuss that. Not a problem. But they have to give you FUMPA or right. a check, because if that liability at that time is 8% of 60 million or 2% of 60 million. They're supposed to give, there are other things. We built some generation, and we gotta look at that. And if then you don't have the liability, say we come up with something that gets rid of that liability, okay? You return them 90% of their money to them. You keep 10%, we call it administrative fee, okay? The thinking there was, we didn't think of swaps yes. back when we did this in the 80s, was you build a generator, okay? And you build it for their load and everybody else's load. And they leave. Okay, well, you got, right now, we got excess generation. Okay, it's costing us money. It's costing one of you, it's like, you're not using it, you're paying for it. Well, they need to keep paying for that, okay, until you grow into it. If you grew into it and you started using it, then you got a benefit of it, and you give them some of that money back. That's how it works. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
That's about it on Vero Beach. Is there anything else you want
no.
to
cover?
We have a meeting. Trying to set up a meeting August 25th or the week of the 25th with them. They're working with OUC to come up with all the details, explain to us what Plan B is, see if we can get comfortable with it. We told them, if you think it's great, let's go file with the IRS. Let's get an opinion, see what comes out. They'll take care of one thing on the project. Okay? They have some ideas how they can back up the liability on the projects, those St. Lucie stand. All right, let's work on that. Our requirements, we haven't really discussed that one yet. Except for their thinking of coming up and see what the city would be willing to do individually. So, Matt, I'd be happy, and I know Fred Bryan would be, if they are going to come up to your city, you want to have a pre-meeting, whatever, especially with you directly or with the council. But that's still out there. But I think it sounds like they're waiting until we have this meeting at the end of August to see where we are. There are some activists down there that are, you get the blogs, and
yeah.
It's on the FUMPA portal.
Yeah, and just to make another connection for you, Representative Mayfield, who has been trying to sponsor legislation to have FMPA regulated by the Public Service Commission, is from Vero Beach.
Right.
Just to make that connection for you.
Yeah. Where are they? I was talking to Fred Bryant at that conference a couple of weeks ago. Where are they in valuing Chris River plan? They're trying to come up with a value, what it was worth, so that we could know what our 1.333% equals in dollars.
Are we covering Chris River 3 now?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this one I do have to be careful. We have a confidential agreement with
sure.
Duke Energy. I can give you the facts as pretty much public and a little more confidentiality agreement applies to the council.
Right.
We, you know, Duke settled with the Public Service Commission and the retail customers. They had a settlement. They have some open issues that they're going to be hearing again in October, so that's the retail side.
Right.
They've settled with Reedy Creek and they settled with Seminole. We've been talking for a while now, representing the 8 joint owners that are FMPA members. We know Cal is 1.33. I think OUC has 1.5. Gainesville has about 1.5. Total 6.25% that the 8 Pompa members own in Crystal River. They're joint owners. And then there's 9 that purchased from Progress Energy over this time period since Crystal River went offline in 2009 that have some claims and discussions are going on. We have a confidential agreement. We waive the statute of limitations. Both sides agree. Let's talk. Let's try to work this out, just like they did with the Public Service Commission. As far as the price of Crystal River, it's been retired now in February.
Okay. Right.
So there is no residual value or salvage value. It's going to cost money, the decommissioning. You were required, as one of the joint owners, so was Duke and the rest of the joint owners, to have a decommissioning fund that you've been putting money in since 1977, maybe it was 78. You've been putting money in this decommissioning fund based on estimates the NRC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, comes out with. Okay. Last time we had a look at that was back in the spring. All of us, including Duke, had to say, do you have enough money? And what the NRC does, they publish, here's the minimum you better have. Here's what you think you need. We think you need. And that was like $757 million to decommission the unit.
How much?
$757 million to decommission in the unit. And don't, maybe $755, I forget the exact number. Everybody looked at it, including Duke. What's a couple million, right?
Yeah.
Everybody looked at it and sent a report to the Public Service Commission. And for our 8 joint owners, including Ocala, everybody, three of the 8 had a little more, 5 of the 8 had a little less. And I think Ocala was on the little less side.
All right.
But that's assuming an estimate on interest rate
right.
going out. Because you're gonna start spending that soon.
Right.
I think in a year or two they'll start using the decommissioning because they're gonna be decommissioning plan. So they chose something called Safe Store. And that means they're gonna put in a storage for 40 years. And then right. start decommissioning out there. But the decommissioning fund could pay for safe storage and all that. We don't have much detail on that. This is all public, so I have no problem. We don't have much detail. They have hired a firm to give them better numbers. Supposed to be by October. Now it's been the spring. We also asked them for better numbers. We're still paying O&M and capital costs. Okay, because they went and bought some fuel because they thought they were going to extend the unit to get store the fuel.
If I can cut in, we're paying 4.5 annually still for O&M and capital without producing any electrons from that plant.
4.5 million.
Yes.
That's Ocala's share.
Yeah.
Okay. Ocala's share.
For O&M and capital.
4.5 million?
4.5 million.
4.5 million.
Let me ask you from an accounting standpoint. I mean, they receive that as income, correct? I mean.
You mean Duke?
Yeah, yeah, Duke. Now, Duke. And then this money that they put in this decommission fund, I mean, is that, and you understand investor-owned utilities, you know, accounting. I mean, that's an above-the-line expense that they can use for rate-making purposes?
No. Decommissioning fund
is not?
Is only for decommissioning, not to pay the O&M,
okay.
not to pay the capital.
Okay.
It's only for decommissioning. That's just going in as expense. And
it's a restricted resource.
Okay. Right. So it's not, they don't use it for rate making.
No.
It's not an above the line.
You can't
expense.
Either. You can't take any money out of that.
Okay. Okay. Until you start decommissioning it.
Yeah. And then Duke does it on your behalf, so to speak. They
right.
already send you a bill and say, hey, take this much out of decommissioning. We haven't done that before, so I don't know exactly how it's going to work.
But if you, what was the license for 40 years?
The original license, 40, to the end of 2016.
So couldn't you as the utility, I'm getting off the subject, but couldn't you as the utility set aside an amount of money as an expense that you're going to have to fund between now and 40 years from now that you're going to, yeah, decommission fund?
Yeah, I mean, you have to do the NRC.
You have to do that.
The NRC has already said it. You've been doing that since 1977.
Okay, but I mean, isn't that an expense?
I don't know how you treat your decommissioning.
We've accumulated about $12 million, I believe, on that decommissioning account.
And we hold that.
We hold that, exactly right.
A fund that you can't touch.
Right, but we do hold it.
Yep. And that's funded through rates. Our rates are set to cover that cost, and we put a certain amount in there annually based upon the NRC report.
Right, okay. I'm just thinking about from there, and I'm just thinking about something else.
And I don't think any of the cities are putting anything in right now.
We're not.
Because it's showing, based on the $750-something million, that you pretty much have enough, and we only assume the, I want to say, 0.8 interest rate going out. You know, some of the cities said 2%, but you know, you got 40 years now, you're going to earn interest on it, you're going to start pulling money out.
Yeah.
But you're not going to pull a lot out until you get closer and closer to when you're going to actually decommission it. And so we need help. We've asked Duke, we need those answers in trying to settle this. How much is this really going to cost? Are we going to be short, long on decommissioning? How long is the O&M going to go out? They just sent us numbers showing what their O&M is for the next 4 years. And then we gave those to you, and you can take a percentage of that. And you're $4.5 million this year, is not all far off. What does that mean? You're not getting any energy out of that. The unit went offline in October 2009. They were replacing the steam generator, and they cut a hole in the containment vessel, put the steam generator back in, and whatever, we'll see when we get more information. A delaminization occurred in the containment vessel, like a crack extended. They fixed that one, another one happened. They got estimates on how much it would cost to really fix it so they could keep operating. They got that last fall. It was the low number, I think it was something like $1.2 to $1.5 billion to get it back in shape. But there was a caveat: if you have to do this, this, and this, it could be as high as $3.5 billion. They made a decision in
And it wasn't
February.
Certain it would fix it.
Huh?
And the investment wasn't certain that it would fix the problem.
The 3.5 probably was close. The 1.2, the 1.5 had a big, they weren't going to fix the dome. They weren't going to fix the bottom of the containment vessel, which they already fixed once. Once they started doing all this in the middle, it could affect this or this. And 3.5, who knows? That was a good number. Their board, Duke, had taken over at that point. They had purchased Progress. Decided to retire in February. So the unit is officially retired. They're not in a decommissioning mode yet. They're still, you're getting bills for O&M capital. They're working on that, and we're supposed to get a report from them. We are actually, the joint owners and the purchasers authorized us to get somebody to look at it from our side, from as an expert to look at it, so we get some earlier information and helping us decide what we do. So with Crystal River, we're in discussions. We had a meeting with them 2 weeks ago. We've made some back and forths, and we'll see where it goes. Don't know if I could say, one thing, positive, very positive news, us pursuing this with them, they did settle with NEIL. That's the national insurance company that insured all nuclear units. It's a, what do you call it?
Reinsurer.
Reinsurer, joint company. People that own nuclear units are the stockholders. All the people that own nuclear units, jointly owned mutual insurance company. That's the word I was looking for. They settled with them for $835 million. $490 million of that, which was the cap, was for what they call replacement energy. Okay. All these years, since 2009, you haven't been getting energy, but you've been paying the bills. And that was a loss to them and the owners and the purchasers. And so the NEIL said, okay, we'll give you the max, $490. For property damage, because they've been paying for all this property damage to try to fix it, they gave them the difference between about $335, $345 million. The replacement energy goes to the retail class and the purchasers. The joint owners did not purchase replacement energy insurance back way back when. So none of that 490 goes to the joint owners. So the purchases got their share recently of $4.3 million. That was the purchaser's share, the wholesale purchases. The retail class got the rest of it. And it was the right numbers. We were able to verify and calculate that for the purchases. It depended on how long you were purchasing from Progress since 2009. They had already gotten some of it before, but how much was due to you? There was who was a purchaser? Homestead was a purchaser, Williston, Bartow, Mount Dora, different periods. But each got their share, whatever it was, as small as $78,000 to as high as $500,000 for the 4.3. The owners okay, which includes Ocala, got a share of the property damage. And you got a check recently on...
2.7?
Something like $2.6, $2.7 million of your share. They were very, took a little pushing, but they were very upfront and said, okay, that's yours. Tell us who you want the checks to go to. We did that several weeks back, and they sent the checks out last week. So, and that was a positive thing. We still have some arguments on some other Neil insurance that's part of the discussion. So that's about the story on Christopher. Unless you have any questions.
Well, also what I said is we lose our replacement cost electricity, Matt.
This fall?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's from a 2002 settlement that we had with Duke.
Right.
But yeah, we lose that probably in November-ish.
It has to be done by December 31st. They're ahead of the game because they were able to give it to you back on different times.
But we're going to lose that and continue have to continue to pay the,
yes.
the
O&M operation and capital
and maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I mean, our rates are could be stressed without a settlement to this.
I can tell you, and stop me, I can tell you in our discussions, we're talking about that very issue.
Yep.
So is that safe?
We're going to pay for the operating maintenance cost and not get the...
We have to.
Yeah.
But that's part of our discussions right now.
Right.
So.
What's right?
Right.
Let's just say that. What's right?
Yeah.
We're discussing.
My
that's
question.
What I was saying earlier, Nick. I mean, you're saying it's a liability. I get that, but I mean, owning 1.33% of a, I guess it's an asset. Mm-hmm. You know,
not
it's
anymore.
A nuclear power plant. It's got to be worth something.
Well, Little Bushnell is concerned about that. They got, I don't know how many moments money they have in their balance sheet. What do they do with it now that it's retired?
Right.
And it's not fully depreciated. So what happens? They take it as a loss. What does it do to their accounting, and how does that work for next this year or next fiscal year? I think they're going to put it, well, they're looking at it this fiscal year. I don't know how you're doing that. Your accountants need probably going to be looking at that. You have it on your books, and it's retired. It's gone. Not gone, but it's, you know, not producing. There's no offsetting value to it.
I think, Mayor, maybe what you're saying is had a different set of decisions been made about the replacement of the generator, that unit could still be online today, and it could still be producing electricity.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, part of our discussions in that it still could have been an asset if it wasn't for some prudent decisions or imprudent decisions.
Well, and I asked those questions numerous times over the years, back in whatever it was, 2004, 5, 6, you know, what's that worth, you know, write us a check. It was like $350 million. Okay, give us the money. No, we can't do that. It's really not worth that. You know, there's a liability and then the, you know, the asset, and you know, it's not worth anything. Just the, you know, power that we were getting, you know, at a discount, that was what the value was. You know, but it was worth something to somebody, I'm sure. You know, but we couldn't sell it. We couldn't do anything with it.
Question. Replacement power in Crystal River. At one time, there was talk of a gas plant, and of course, the Levy County project. Do you have any updates on those?
On the Levy County?
On the Levy County, or whether there was going to be a gas plant built on the Crystal River,
Duke was talking about,
or does that is that part of the confidentiality?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Like I said over there, that as far as Levy County, we were in detailed discussions with them for the requirements. Moving ahead for a percentage ownership, I think we're talking about 10 to 20% for the members, because they delayed that now.
Mm-hmm.
They said they will come back to us. They are still moving ahead to get the COLA,
mm-hmm.
construction operating license. Mm-hmm. As I heard from them, they're still moving ahead with it very slowly. The NRC has been still looking at, because of Fukushima, at safety and maybe adding things to the license process. Because it's taken so long, the design, there's been some changes in the design of the project, so they're filing new stuff there, but it's moving ahead. Their latest ISO, it's been a couple months, it's 2022, 2023, is when they're looking, it could come online by. They're still interested in talking to cities. If they're interested, we'll have to see what they say. That's still moving ahead, Levy County, but the long way off. You know, it'll take them a couple of years to get to COLA, and nuclear units, new ones, they're saying maybe 6 to 8 years to build it. So, you know, you could see that it could be 2022-23, and the price has gone up. As far as the two gas units, the two coal units, Crystal 1 and 2, they've now started retiring them. And I don't quote me on this, I sort of remember recently reading that they decided not to convert them to gas. They're just going to retire them. But don't quote me, but I could get you the information, get back to Matt, and let you know. Is that what's going to happen at that site?
Yeah, I mean, just trying to get an idea what's, how that's going to happen. And I did have a question on natural gas. I mean, in the past, when we got, FMPA, we got in a little bit of trouble when we bought gas futures at a high price. Probably oversimplified what happened. Now the gas futures are very low. Why wouldn't we do the same thing? And, well, you knew I was going to ask that question.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
I mean.
Lock them in for a while.
And, I mean, at least you know what the, if they go down to $1 or whatever, cubic, whatever, of gas, you know, but you, at least you have an idea. You could lock in your, the next 10 years at
maybe
a very, very low rate.
For 5 years.
I'm going to take this on because as a member of our requirements project executive committee, there is a great deal of apprehension about any type of financial hedging program right now. In fact, so much apprehension that they're considering removing the one final financial hedging tool that we have, which is called our FST Plus. And Ocala argues very adamantly that we need to have a financial hedging program for the reasons what you state. But because of what happened in 2008 and the $220 million mark-to-market loss, there is a great deal of apprehension. And many argue that we should simply follow the market, that we don't need to be in the financial hedges game, and we should just pay the market and develop a rate stabilization fund and leverage that to ensure smooth rates. So really, it's becoming a political hot potato with a lot of people still burnt by what happened in 2008, wanting to get as far away as they can from the hedging process.
That was a 10-year hedge we did, though, right?
No.
How many years?
It ends this fall.
3 years.
It was a 3 years?
Yeah, some of it was 2 years. The worst was, so we did in 08, and it ends in 13, so maybe it was five years.
5 years.
That's a small piece. We were at some point 80-90% hedged.
Early on.
We're now about
30%
hedged.
Yeah. But all of them sunset this fall.
Right. Let me ask you this question. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'll finish and not
sure.
And I know where you feel, how you feel about this, but it just bothers me that the fact that everyone would jump in and hedge it when it's at $10 and it's at $2 or $3, they're scared to death to do it. And that just doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Yeah. I mean, you're
you know,
you're
what,
only like from zero to three.
You can see the bottom.
Yeah.
A lot more risk going up than there is down, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah.
I mean, there's always the risk that there's a new power source out there and somebody will develop some cold fusion technology.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean,
really.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Councilman McLeod. I mean, you're talking about, it's at three now?
It's about three to four.
Last night, so it was 360.
Yeah.
Yeah, from that to zero. Beyond that, it's, you know, they're giving you money to do it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's like your risk is, I mean, okay, it maybe goes to two or one. You know, the other way, you know, 10, well, yeah, I mean, you've got, you know, it could really, you know, drop. I mean, yeah, I would argue that you, like Councilman McLeod says, you know, you should hedge it, you know, at that rate. 10, no, but, you know, at three and a half, yeah, definitely. But here's the question I was going to ask too, is, you know, kind of related to that, and I'd asked before. We've got a certain amount of power that we generate ourselves and we distribute to our members, correct?
Yes.
What percentage is that, ballpark?
Probably a little more than half that we generate ourselves.
About half, okay.
Yeah, we have 200-300 megawatt units and some down in Key. We probably got about 700 megawatts of generation or
okay.
own generation,
okay.
and the load's around 1,300.
Okay, so the rest of it we buy from, is there a way that you can position yourself where let's say if gas is cheap, but you're buying gas, if nuclear is cheap, you're buying nuclear, whatever the cheapest source of power is, that's what you're buying? Or do we do that now anyway?
Well, let me explain. The stuff we have is fixed.
Right.
We generate on gas. We generate those units all gas. It's all generation. The way we do what you're asking is we belong to what we call the Florida Municipal Power Pool.
Right.
With OUC and Lakeland, two big utilities. And
right.
Us, we're probably, OUC's maybe 1,800 megawatts, we're 1,300, Lakeland's maybe 8.
And I'm talking about other than what we're generating.
No, we put that all together.
Okay.
And we run the cheapest we can among all three.
Okay.
So we're buying from them, we're selling to them, back
right.
and forth. If our gas is cheaper, we'll run our units more. If their coal is cheaper, and we're trying to increase that. We're trying to bring others in. The other way we do that, so you can't do that on long term, but you can do it on
right.
Hourly, weekly,
right.
monthly.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
We also do that, the public service put in place a year or two ago, what they call the broker. Not working this back the way we want, because
right.
everybody has so much capacity. But the idea is the broker, you broker between each other.
Right.
Hour by hour, week by week basis. I mean, the old days, again, I go way back, in the old days they had a broker in the 80s, and there were millions of dollars of savings in the state of Florida from brokering between you each day and then over a year.
Right.
I think last time the pool said we saved $50,000. It's just everybody has so much capacity and so much coal and gas and about the same price, you can't go back and forth too much.
Well, and see, I was told before there was no capacity back when I was asking those questions in 2006, 2007. I said, well, there isn't any capacity. We can't do that.
That was true.
Really?
That's why we built Treasure Coast. In Cane Island, well, Treasure Coast before, but Cane Island came on in 2011. What happened in 2008? Lehman Brothers went bankrupt,
right.
the economy went down, interest rates went down, and all that capacity I put up, some of our city's load growth went this way.
Right, okay.
You know, I don't remember what Ocala did, but we have 1,300 megawatts. It might have been
2008.
Our kilowatt sales are less now than they were in 2001.
Yeah, see, things went down. So. We built, Treasure Coast came on in 2008, in the summer of 2008.
Wow.
What happened September, I noticed exactly, because I started at Fumper on September 5th, and Lehman went bankrupt on September 15th, I think it was. And everything went to hell. And, excuse me. And just in time for me to go meet with the cities.
And I've got a little question still on the natural gas thing. Are we too reliant on natural gas as a power source? Are we overburdened in that category?
Yeah, this is great. You're answering most of the questions I still have left here. I'm going to be able to skip a lot of pages. Yeah, we're about, our fuel is about 50% of our total cost. And our fuel is nuclear gas and coal. What we generate, what we actually run, is about 70%. Okay, we're almost 70% gas right now. Changing a little bit because coal prices come down. Yes, we are. I mean, it's great right now because gas prices are low, but we are not diversified enough. And one of the things I had in here, one of the things we're looking at is diversifying.
Well, and at layman, obviously, how do you diversify if it takes another 10 years to build a nuclear power plant and, you know, the state has put a squash on building a coal-fired plant? I mean, how do you diversify at that point?
You know, one way we're trying right now, there are a couple of utilities that have offered us existing nuclear, okay, out of existing nuclear plants. MEAG, who is a joint action agency like FOPA, like mm-hmm. FMK in Georgia, has a lot of nuclear in Vogtle 1 and 2, two nuclear units up in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
They've asked that we're interested in buying up to 100 megawatts of that. We have been studying that for the York Grimes project and for Lakeland, Gainesville, a couple other cities. That's one way. You're not getting any more coal.
Yes.
Not in Florida. You can't diversify. And there was a little coal they're talking about in Georgia they might be willing to sell. But nuclear is one way.
Nick, can I chime in real quick?
Yeah.
What I've argued, and I want to say this so you understand, is that on that project Nick just talked about, that we approach it with a power purchase agreement and not as an owner. And I'm arguing that in light of the CR3, right? And so going as a power purchase agreement, I think, has less risk.
I'm assuming that if you do a power purchase agreement, you're going to pay a little bit more for the electricity because you don't have to worry about the liability on the back end of being
yeah,
an owner.
It'd be yeah. in the rate.
And we're in negotiations, they've been willing, we're moving ahead on that, you know, 100 meg, but there's not many opportunities right now. Everybody's long, you know, and most of Power and Light is probably as much gas as we are.
Right, and, you know, part of that, renewables aren't really efficient enough to do anything in that area. I kind of know the answer to the question, but I thought I'd ask it anyway.
We met with a solar company last week, we met with a solar company 3 weeks ago, at least once a month, no wind, but solar, and we look at it, we're really looking at it. The price has been coming down, but that's, you know, really small. There's no more hydro in the state, really, maybe there is, but nothing's come up. Wind, Power and Light tried to put a wind farm off of St. Lucie County by the St. Lucie plant. The environmentalists killed it because of the aesthetics and the birds. So our only option seems to be solar. We have a small 27 kilowatt solar
send them
project
some Muskogees.
In Key West. But yeah, we look, the price has come down. It just announced in the paper the other day, Winter Park just signed a contract for 2.25 megawatts of solar. The price came down to $65
right.
a megawatt hour. But our avoided cost, which we could avoid, it's in the 40s, 30s, 40s, you know, so I'm very aware of my members' feelings on this. I can't go to my members and say, we're going to do this and it's going to raise your rates.
Right. Are there going to be any federal requirements that we carry a certain percentage of renewables that you know of?
Probably we're the last area that, I guess there are some others. The Northeast, California, all have. California has to have 20 or 30% renewables by 2020. They're already up in the teens.
Mm-hmm.
There is none down here, none in the Southeast. What they call renewable performance standards, RPSs. There are none here yet.
And so,
is that done at the state level usually?
Could be, or the federal level.
Federal level. So,
and most of it's at the state level. Actually, the federal hasn't done it. They talk about it. California state, Northeast state. Yeah.
So, are we preparing? Hopefully, we have a plan in place to take care of that if the feds get involved and say we have to provide some portion of it. Which scares the hell out of me, but that's just me.
We keep talking to these people. We see some. If we get some close, then you balance. Maybe we better buy some now.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they do put an RPS, price will probably go back up because then
right.
demand. So we're looking at that, but it's hard to come to an executive committee and say, hey, we could go pay 65. It's only costing 45, but let's go ahead. Now, we're looking at maybe if we can find a small project, get our feet wet. The other thing is solar, you know, it's there on a day, it's not at night, you gotta have the backup generation for it. A lot of things you gotta think about before we get into that. And but as far as the back to diversification, right now we got this Vogtle option. We've had Sandy Cooper came to us on the new coal nuclear, that's not coming on to 2018. It was too expensive. We had some existing nuclear in the Carolinas came to us. Their price was too expensive. Plus you gotta get it down across the border. This one we're looking at, there's a possibility there is some transmission across the border and we get some more nuclear, but I'm going to run into, we want to get into those existing nuclear units that got 30 years left based on what happened with Crystal River. But we'll present it, and my feeling, if we get the price right, I probably would recommend it. Then it'll be up to, it's a more than a 7-year deal, so then it's a supermajority vote. But we'll bring it, but that's all we have right now.
Yeah. If we're over relying on natural gas, but we won't take the opportunity to buy the futures when they're down low.
I think Matt gave a good explanation.
Yeah.
That. Right now.
I know how he feels about it.
Yeah, I know how Matt feels too, and there's a few others.
Yeah.
But the majority, actually, what they asked me to do back in the July meeting, go back, and I got to bring it back in August. We have what we call FST, FMPA short-term hedging, because that's 4 months. We had the long-term hedging, 3-4 year hedging. Down, it's going to end October 1. There'll be no more of that left. We have the short-term hedging, certain triggers. Things start creeping up. We buy, and if it goes down, we sell right away. You know, we get out. We call it an insurance policy. If we buy, and it just stays there for a little while, comes down in a month, we bought 4 months worth at that price, we got to sell it. It goes down 50 cents. It's probably cost us about $6 million in the last year and a half to have that protection. Was $8 million, but one time we hit it, and by the time we were able to get out, we got out positive about $1.5 million. So it's about $6.5 million its cost over the last year and a half. There was a motion made at the last meeting to go back and consider just ending that also. The reason is that it's flat pretty much right now. Yes, it's been between $3.50 and $4. I think the highest in the last 6 months was $4.20. Been down around $3.40. It's like this. So we'll bring it back. And I think my committee that I turned it over to is looking at it and see if they were, should we stop? Should we keep doing it? Could we tweak it somehow?
Well, what we're going to argue from Ocala is let's just change the trigger. Let's just change the trigger sensitivity, not throw the baby out in bathwater.
Right.
Just change that trigger a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it, when you buy it at $10, and I'm assuming they didn't buy puts at the time.
Oh, we did everything.
They did. They had puts in place.
We put it in. We got down to 6.25 now, and yeah, we did some puts. We got rid of some.
Yeah.
But we had, like I said, 80% to 90% in 2009, 2010. Started going down to 10. We're down like about 25%. We got one other piece of diversifying, which is the opposite. We bought into a company called PGP, Public Gas Partners, where we bought wells in development areas, and they're drilling. Unfortunately, there's not much drilling going on because the price is so low to drill new wells. We own that, and we call Pool 1 and 2. It's about 7% of our gas.
I have one more question. And I know there was a move fairly early on to go to the bigger power plants because they were more efficient. Is that correct?
Yeah, economies of scale. Yeah.
2013. Is there any talk about relooking at that and maybe doing some smaller power plants, you know, within the system, or is that just not efficient enough to do?
I mean, more like we used to have 30, 40, 50 megawatt units.
Yeah. On a smaller scale, is that just not efficient enough for the whole group?
Yeah, not with a load of 1,300 megawatts. That's what we went with, 300 megawatts. These are our smallest units, are the 300s. When we were going to build that co-unit called Taylor, it was going to be first 600, then it went to 800. The nuclear that being built, all the current nuclear were biggest with 800 megawatts. They're all looking at 1,100 megawatts now. Everybody's going the other way.
Right.
There are economies of scale again.
Most of those types of units are used for peaking, you know, to cover that load during your peak hours. Nick, can you maybe conclude by talking about very briefly the Taylor County swaps?
Okay. I'm going to listen. We talked about that. We talked about fuel. We talked about hedging. I did have some stuff in here you have in front of you about your rates. Could you just go to this one? It's a couple more. Back one. This is a good news one. I want to say, you know, you can see where our rates were in 2009. We've come down 20% since 2009, 2012. Bumped up in 2013 because Cane Island came on. We got the fixed cost. Gas prices went up. Coming back down in 2014. If you look at the next one, this is shows our cost and your cost from 2009 to 2010. We were up at $130 a megawatt hour. Your retail rates were about $140. And you stayed there, and ours was in the hundreds and the high 90s. Go to the next one. We came down, you see we had a couple months in the 70s. You even had a month in the 60s. You guys came down to the 120s and the 19. You even had some summer rate relief programs in the 106. All our members are that way. They've been coming down more competitive. Next one. This shows a rate comparison of all the utilities in the state. You can look at it. Ocala is in there. You're below the municipal average for the month of May. And on the next one, at 2,500 kilowatt hours, you're below the municipal and IOU average. Now, the low in the state right now you hear is Power and Light. That's true. But you're very competitive with your main competitor, Progress Energy, in the rates and with your other municipal members. Keep going.
Mount Dora.
Sorry.
Back that up.
Sorry, what?
Mount Dora, they look pretty cheap. Who are they buying theirs from?
Mount Dora, where are they? Up top or?
Yeah, kind of about the middle.
That's us, ain't it?
Three quarters of the way over to the right.
No, Mount Dora is in, they're buying from Duke. They're a little bit above. You look at the 1,000 or 2,500.
Yeah, I'm looking at their base rate.
Yeah, they're a little higher. They buy from Duke.
Yeah, well, we have
their base rate.
Their base rate is real low. the lowest. And then, you know, with their fuel.
The blue section.
The blue section.
Oh, okay.
Barn.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's why they have a fuel, sorry, fuel adjustment clause.
Oh, okay.
They have a really low.
Right.
And, but the rest of it goes on top. Yeah, that's
gotcha.
Why. And anybody can play with that.
Right.
Just how you set your fuel adjustment
true.
Level. Sorry, I didn't catch that right away.
That's all right.
Next, this to me is good news. Our members, we did a satisfaction survey we do every 2 years. 90% of our members were very satisfied with FMPA, and we're moving in the right direction. A lot of that had to do with rates coming down, but. And then I had some electric industry outlook. I won't get into this except to say, you know, we do, and if you were at the annual meeting, I had a presentation at our lunch. We are focused on what's going on in the industry as far as Vero Beach type of things that are happening. The opposite is happening too. Winter Park formed a new utility. South Daytona looked at forming a new utility. But around the country, there's a mix that we haven't seen in a long time of some of the investor-owned utilities buying out other investor-owned utilities like Duke there with Progress and looking at municipals and co-ops and vice versa. We're trying to make sure we get that story out. I put an article, Boulder, Colorado is getting close to forming a municipal utility because they want to be more environmentally friendly. That's their reason.
Right.
Keep going. So we talk about diversifying resources, national trends, we talk about some. Keep going to the next one.
Okay.
Bump of strategic initiatives real quick. We're going to have a strategic plan. September 24th for the Executive Committee, September 25th for the Board. Last one was in February 2009. And home power advantage is FMPA and FMPA's way of trying to get out to the cities so you could get out to your customers. What's the benefits of this power, like you talked, reliability? You're more reliable investing in service, local investment, accountability to the citizens, and more powerful together. It's we have a new website called homepoweradvantage.com. It's on the FMPA portal. Matt got a little souvenir from the annual meeting that has it all over it, and we've asked that if you could put it on your website so your citizens could see what the benefits are and try to get the word out there. And then the last is, actually, Taylor Swaps is the last thing. I have CR3 and Vero Beach at the end, but we've already done that. You want me to spend a little time on Taylor Swaps?
Please. About 5 minutes.
Okay. Taylor Swaps. Real quickly, what is Taylor Swaps? We were going to build a coal unit in 2006, okay, with JEA and Tallahassee and Reedy Creek. Moving ahead, costs were going up. Concrete, steel, everything was going up. He said, what can we fix? You know, interest rates. We could fix our debt service. So the bank is working with our financial people over this idea of swaps, and they've got a bad name, they have, in some cases they were, but we had some here we thought was worthwhile. This was before 2000, this was 2006. We've gone to build this coal unit, Jay, everybody was with us. What you do, a swap is, you go ahead and issue the debt, say it would have happened, we would have built Taylor, we never did. You would issue debt at variable rate. Back then it was 72% of LIBOR. It was like 1.5%. So you issue your $600 million at 1.5% variable. Changes every day. We'd have been great from 6 to like 2008, but in the end of 2008, variable went to 10%. 72% of 10%. We'd have been paying high. But what we would have done, we would have done a swap back in 2006. We would have said, okay, you banker, we had 14 counterparties, Merrill Lynch, Bank of America, et cetera. Okay. If we build this plant before 2015, what will happen is we'll take it out with fixed debt, guaranteed 3.75. Okay, this debt that we're paying variable, we're going to keep paying. Okay, but we're going to swap it. You bank are going to pay us the same thing. We cancel out this debt, and we're going to have fixed debt of $600 million at 3.75. So we fixed in a rate going out several years. It would have turned out pretty good. Not great, but 3.7, long rate right now is about 3.65 or something like that. So we'd had 3.75, but it would have been guaranteed for 30 years, okay? And we swapped over here and canceled each other out. We never did build the Taylor plant. Governor Crist in 2010, whatever it was, 2008, maybe it was 2010, came out with his edict, you know, no more coal in the state. So we had no choice. We canceled, Power and Light canceled, TECO canceled, coal plant. So we have these swaps, and the swap says you have to do something by 2015, or you got to pay a termination fee, whatever it is back then. In 2010, the members said, hey, we don't want this liability. We've got nothing we're building. You know, we really didn't have anything to use the money for. Let's get out of these. So they passed a motion that if the sale or swap termination went to zero or less, get out. Okay? Because termination is based on the curve, on the yield curve. It's a combination of the low curve and the high 30-year and the, you know, 1 month. I always use the 10-year as a good base. Okay? When we got out, and every one of our 14, $50 million swaps, they're $15 million, 14 of them, that's $700 million, has a different trigger. Okay? We had five of them come down when interest rates were around 3.2, 3.3, and we terminated them, okay, because they went to zero penalty. So we got out of $250 million, they're gone, we have no worries about them. We still got $450 million, right? Yeah, $450 million. Okay. Before those went to zero, they never went to zero and they started going up. The board executive stuck with, don't get out, maybe we can still use them until we're at zero. They didn't want to pay anything back then to get out. So the termination, unfortunately, 2008 came, interest rates started going down. Interest rates right now, the 10-year had went down as low as 1.6. The termination fee had, was $140 million a couple of months ago. We're not going to pay $140 million to get out. We still got time. It's back up to around 2.5, 2.6. In the last couple of weeks, the termination fee has been about $60 million. Still probably too high to recommend. Staff was commissioned to go out and figure out what can we do? What can we do short of hopefully interest rates go up? Is there something we could do before 2015? I put a team together of all our financial people, our financial advisor, our bankers, and they've been working. I got a whole bunch of slides, which I can't cover in 5 minutes. You have a bunch of different alternatives of how we might use those.
I can go to that slide.
Do I have an alternative slide?
Yes, you do.
I gave you a good, that was a quick what they are. We got $450 million sitting out there. The termination fee right now is 60. Okay, yeah, that's good. First question is, do we wait? And we could wait until October 1st, 2015. If interest rates go, if that 10 years, probably in the 3.8 range, 3.6, 3.7, 3.8 range, probably get out even. Or do we grab it if it's only $10 million and terminate it? And could you, I have a really good slide I'd like to show them. Go to page 41. What is that? Go to one go before this one.
Back up.
Back up. Back up one more. Okay. If it goes down to $25 million, okay, that's what it says at the bottom, and we could issue fixed debt at 3.5% over 5 years, it would cost a typical 1,000 kilowatt hour customer in your system $1 a month for 5 years. If we could go a 10-year deal, it would cost them 50 cents a month. So is there an amount that you, the members, would be comfortable with? Let's just get out of these things before it goes back up to, you know, $140 million. That's one opportunity. We got that on the table. Don't have to rush. Okay, the $60 million, I don't think you want to do. Went down to $10 million? Maybe. Maybe get rid of some of them? Okay, now you could go two more. Oh, yeah. This one. Okay. Okay, so what we're looking at, can we issue bonds? You have to issue bonds associated with something, bricks and mortars, I call it, or prepays or something like that. There are some potential opportunities to do that. We don't have to add any generation, but we also could use it to take out, refinance some bonds that are callable in 2018. There's some cost to it, but there's some benefit to it. And again, not enough time to explain all the details of that, but we are looking at, we have several alternatives. Each one of these three, there are subsets to it, and the team has given two workshops already. We'll probably have another one in September or October of where we are. We're 2 years away from the trigger, so keeping an eye on this, and we're working with the executive committee on how we might get out. Interest rates go up, we're home free. If we needed a project, we could do something, but we don't have a project right now. That's quick.
Sounds good.
Any questions for Nick on any FMPA-related issue? If not, Council Pro Tem will Turn it back to you.
If we're done, then this meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.
Thank you.